Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Don Allen, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing on this, it's what seems like kind of chilly day?
Can't beat it, Mr. Allen. Yeah, I had a chance to play a little golf earlier today, you know, and very comfortable on the course, if you will. So we love these kinds of conditions, if you will. Best of conditions, if you will, here in America.
Yes, exactly. A lot of stuff going on here in the city and nationally also, Mr. Edwards. And go ahead.
No, go right ahead, Mr. Allen. Because we've got some things on the terrible scandal within the Veterans Administration. Is that correct?
That is correct. You know, bad VA care may have killed, is what they're saying, more than 1,000 veterans. And that's from a senator's report in Washington, D.C., from Senator Tom Colbert. And this is very interesting, Mr. Edwards, because you know I am a veteran of the United States military. I'll be honorably discharged in 1981. I did 3 years of inactive duty also, reserve. And so for a total of 6 years. And so it kind of bothers me, although I have seen in real time waiting 2 months for eyeglass appointments, waiting, you know, there's no dental for you unless – what happens? Well, let me explain this to you.
Yes, sir.
If you have a problem with your teeth and you need, or say like you need them cleaned, or you need a root canal, they don't do that. All they do is pull your teeth. If you're a veteran, you have to be a prisoner of war or 100% service connected disabled for them to even.
In other words, you'd have had to been held in a prisoner of war compound or been the unfortunate recipient of an explosion that did significant facial damage, jawbone and stuff, such things as that, which then led to complications as it pertains to preserving your teeth. Is that correct?
That is correct. And also there is some exclusions from that rule. If you're involved in an education program, they might work on your teeth. Other than that, you have this one brother. I was out at the VA about 2 weeks ago, and he was complaining. You know, he says, well, a private dentist says, well, you need a root canal. He goes to the VA, says, well, all we'll do is pull it. You know, it's one of his teeth in front of his mouth. And he says, am I supposed to be walking around without a tooth in my mouth? And he doesn't have insurance. And so he just says he's going to have to just deal with it, live with the pain, because he really needs a root or find a dentist that can do that. But you know, as far as the VA is concerned, you have people going to the emergency room, getting needles put in their knees, getting staph infections, and this is the one here in Minneapolis. And I agree with everything that's going on. I'm glad the FBI launches their criminal probe on Wednesday, June 11th. And you know, there's 120,000 plus, and that's a lowball number, I think, Mr. Edwards, veterans waiting for a number of things, because what happens now in the VA system, say that if you you were injured in the service and you apply for service-connected disability, what they do is they grant you 0% to start out with. 0% is basically nothing. And then what that does, it dissuades a lot of veterans to say, hey, I don't want to go through this. I waited 8 months or a year or 2 years to get a zero rating. And if you're not meticulous and go back after them for that 30, 60, 70, 90, or whatever rating, you know, they'll forget about you. But once you get above 50, or actually if you get 30 and above, or even 20, every 2 years they can come after you and tell you, oh, we've heard that your disability is getting better, and so we're going to lower your rating for your overall service connection compensation each month.
Well, Don, let me ask you a question on that. How does that work when you're an amputee? Because I can't imagine any circumstances which led to your, of course, condition of being an amputee where your condition could get better. I mean, the limb is gone. And if, of course, you receive a prosthetic, if you will, there's always a situation that could cause complications. You mean they actually would talk to you like that? That we're going to reduce your disability because we feel that your amputeeism is getting better? That is stupid.
There's guys with degenerative arthritis in both knees, ankles, blood disorders that they will actually send letters out that we heard that, I mean, we're aware that your disability or your knees and your degenerative arthritis is getting better. So we're considering reducing your service-connected disability. And so what happens is they send them to these insurance doctors out in Maple Grove who they really act like they're for the veterans, but they're actually for the VA to make sure they can cut your benefits off, okay, that are lower.
Well, let me ask this question with regards to these relationships. I watched a piece on CNN 2 days ago, Anderson Cooper and his gang doing an exclusive, in which a clerk, benefits specialist in the Phoenix. Boy, I tell you, that Phoenix, Arizona Veterans Hospital is clearly not a place to go to. God help you if you're living in the Phoenix area and you get sick. You'd probably do better to go across the border to Mexico. But this lady is the key whistleblower in talking in terms that the VA is actually putting deceased individuals back on a list that would pretend that they are waiting for a medical appointment. I mean, that is criminal, Mr. Allen. Is that the reason that the FBI has been brought in?
Yeah, I think the FBI would have to be brought into something like this because you have people, Mr. Edwards, that will start at the VA, they retire at the VA because the government benefits, I guess, are wonderful, and they get to the point where they actually stop serving the veteran. You know, I heard one of the VA police tell a group of black veterans that, hey, you know, don't give me that shit that you're a veteran, that you deserve this. I'll put you out of this hospital. You know, and
okay.
So they'll mark things in your file that, you know, some of these guys have private doctors, but they go to the VA for some stuff, and their private doctor might have told them, says, hey, don't let anybody at the VA give you this drug because it might cause a heart attack or it might do this, this, or that. So if a guy goes to the VA and they want to immediately give the guy that particular drug, he says, no. My private doctor said they mark a thing in your file that you're uncooperative, that you refuse medical advice, and that black flag stays with you in your VA file all throughout, you know, your history with the VA. And every time you go in the emergency room, they treat you like an unwanted stepchild. This VA here has some issues. I mean, there was some meetings with the Black Veterans of America here in Minnesota chapter, and we heard horror stories where African-American veterans went out to this VA, the BAMC, Minneapolis Veterans Administration Medical Center, out on Hiawatha there, and they said, well, we can't see you because this, this, or that. And the guy got back in his car and went to another hospital, and the doctors in the emergency room said, if you hadn't come here, you probably would have died in your car, had a massive heart attack.
Yeah, I kind of have heard some of those stories. But I have to go back to when we get to the place where a government employee is told to have two lists, one the death list and the other one the BS list. In other words, manure. And when this whole issue started with regards to the Veterans Administration and the Inspector General began his examination or his office's examination. It appears now, according to the whistleblowers, and there's two, Dr. Hood also has become quite a hero, Dr. Foote. And they maintain that there was an escalation in cover-ups, even as members of the Veterans Administration last year, Ms. Lerner and others, were testifying before committees of Congress that they were falsifying this and that she got orders to go into her desk and to pull out this death list and take names off the list of individuals that had expired and redesignate them and make it appear that they were being assigned a time certain for an appointment. I mean, Don, is that kind of stuff really what the is the order of the day.
That's what happens. I mean, it's already been proven. It's out there with the Phoenix. The investigations are going on. But the same problem that how can I put this? I'll just put it plainly. The same problem, and it's unfortunate that a lot of the veterans, we consider all ourselves green, okay? And we wear the uniforms, and at least back when I was in the service, and there's not supposed to be separation in race and economic status and color and et cetera, but if you go out to the VA, you can clearly, especially this one in Minneapolis, you are treated in some really strange ways, and you could tell that these people could give a damn about veterans. They're there to work the time and go home, and it's a dirty, rotten shame, but there's a lot of stuff going on here at this Minneapolis VA, and I hope in the very near future we can have this individual on who used to work there in the mental health department, and the stories that this young lady has, Mr. Edwards, it's going to the FBI probably will be calling us to ask for her phone number.
Wow. Let me ask this question, Mr. Allen. Two-part question. Number one, how would you rate the two United States senators and the congressman from the district in which the Minneapolis Veterans Hospital is located? And how is this hospital currently, to the best of your knowledge, rated as a part of the massive investigation that is going on with regards to rating the hospitals for proficiency and et cetera? How does this hospital rate, to the best of your knowledge?
Okay, well, to answer your question, this is supposed to be one of the top facilities in the United States as far as physical condition, physical plant, I should say. I think when the scandal is revealed and all these veterans come forward that have been to this VA, I think it's going to be one of the top 10 in the scandals. Once it's all said, and right now it's a lot of hurry up and correct stuff quickly before they get there if they're not there already. As far as the congressman for the 5th Congressional District, if 10 is the best, I have to give him a .09. On his dealing with veterans. I've heard horror stories of sending Congressman Keith Ellison, 5th Congressional District, letters that say they misplaced them, and he didn't address anything. I once, Mr. Edwards, went in to talk to one of his guys. I think at the time his name was Mike, and asked him to look into some stuff for me, and it was like, we'll do this and we'll do that, and just nothing happened. And so, I mean, I have no faith in that office as far as it comes to the VA hospital. As far as Senator Franken and his right hand, Ayanna Kennedy, has done a good job at answering questions. And I think out of all of them, I would have to say that Senator Franken is on top of his game when it comes to the VA, because he's going to tolerate no BS. You know, from the VA on behalf of veterans. But as far as the other one, you know, Klobuchar, I don't know what she's doing. She does these panels for veterans, and you hear about it one year, Mr. Edwards, and then it's the next year it's like totally disappeared. I think it's Representative Tim Walz. I'm not sure which district he's out of.
Timmy.
He is a rising star every year with veterans. He breaks it down. He's a veteran himself, and he does some really good stuff. He's out there, and I don't think he gets congressional or the senatorial help he needs to push the veteran agenda forward in Minnesota. But he's out there stomping for veterans on a regular basis, and I think that's really good. Our governor, I give him maybe a 2 out of 10.
Okay.
And our African American elected state, our senators, I don't even know what they're doing these days. But anyway, that's a whole other subject.
Okay. Well, look, Don, I understand we possibly have one of the leadership of the Council on Black Minnesotans, so I'll set the stage for our discussion with the chairperson of the Council on Black Minnesotans. Have they indicated any concern or interest on behalf of black veterans here in the state of Minnesota, to the best of your knowledge?
Oh, yes. I would have to agree with some statements from Mr. Chairman Patwin Lawrence and Mr. Ed McDonald as far as looking at veterans for, you know, they have their upcoming event is what we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But I mean, they even went as far as put inviting veteran-owned businesses and veterans that are interested in business to come out to this Power of Unity Economic Summit. But I think that veterans are a priority for the Council on Black Minnesotans, and I think that they are adequately doing what they need to do, because that's a, Mr. Edwards, like you said, that's a whole different cast of individuals, male and female veterans. And I think what the council will do at some point is say, okay, let's concentrate this particular programming on veterans like they do for the Power of Unity and the black businesses, because it's something that's needed. And as the focus groups that I've done for the Black Veterans of America here in Minnesota, it's something that needs to happen. These veterans need an outlet, especially the Native American veterans, even back from Korea till just recently Afghanistan, Iraq. They need an outlet, and I think that the Council of Black Minnesotans are doing a very good job. And I'm not saying that because they gave me any money, because they didn't. So we'll just figure it out. But,
well, I kind of heard a little cough there in the background about that. Yeah. So I think that our guest or guest, if you will, I understand Mr. McDonald may join us. Why don't you segue into it, Mr. Albin, introduce them, and you say there's some questions with regards to a conference that they're having this weekend. Go ahead, Don. Take it from there.
Yes. I'd like to let everybody know and invite everybody to the 2014 Power of Unity Economic Summit presented by the Council on Black Minnesotans. It's Friday, June 27th, from 8:30 to 4 p.m. The first 75 people there get free parking in the ramp adjacent the Carlson School of Management, which is at 321 19th Avenue South on the campus of the University of Minnesota. Day two, Saturday 28th, 8:30 to 4 p.m. Registration check-in is at 8:30 p.m. And, you know, Mr. Edwards, this is really wonderful because this is the first time I've never been, have not been marginalized in a community event. They're actually letting me do a two-hour internet marketing presentation for black businesses and deploying technology and using social media. So I'm very, and for some of our listeners that are texting me, am I getting paid for that? No, I am not. And I would like to introduce the chairman of the board, three-time elected chairman of the board, I think. Is Mr. Ed McDonald on right now also? Mr. McDonald, is that you?
No.
Okay, this is, Will, we have the chairman of the board, Mr. Pat Wynn Lawrence. Mr. Lawrence, welcome to the show tonight.
All right, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well,
welcome, Mr. Lawrence. Mr. Allen, go right ahead and make inquiry.
Yes, yes. So let's tell the people about a little something about the Power of Unity Economic Summit. Who should come? Everybody should come, actually. And how do they register? And just kind of give us a breakdown of what day one, Friday, June 27th, looks like. And then let's come back to Saturday, June 28th. Take it away.
All right. Well, the Power of Unity Economic Development Summit really came out of our listening sessions that we've done in the community. You know, about 2 years ago, we did a legacy listening tour where we went around the state and we went to Minneapolis, St. Cloud, Duluth, Faribault, Rochester, and listen to community members to hear, you know, what are the issues and concerns in the community. And as we were doing that, we also noticed that there was an issue between the African and African-American communities. And so what we decided to do last year was to do a Power of Unity Cultural Relations Summit, bringing the African and African-American community together to see how can we move black Minnesota forward, because we're all people of African heritage. And then part of that, we noticed that, you know, the two major issues with the black community in Minnesota, but you can also, you know, draw this out nationally, is, first of all, we don't know who we are, particularly African Americans, just because of our, you know, history here in the U.S. and, you know, our heritage from Africa being stolen from us, and then we basically had to take on a European background or heritage. And so it was, you know, finding out who we are, our roots, but then also that economic piece. Because of all the disparities and issues that are going on in our community, a big chunk of resolving that is looking at the economic aspect. How can we become more economically self-sufficient, independent in Minnesota, for instance? And so we said, well, we can divide this up into two different summits. And so last year we did the Cultural Relations Summit. This year we're doing the Power of Unity Economic Development Summit. And so what we want to look at, you know, this is for all members of the community. We're really targeting also business owners because this is going to be a great opportunity for them to network, to connect with state government, that, you know, different departments that work with economic development, and then also other business interest in the community. So it's going to be a time to network, develop relationships with state agencies, identify key emerging sectors and opportunities for business and entrepreneurial development, also create a strategy for our African heritage economics, moving from a place of dependency to self-sufficiency and self-determination, and then also to assist the council because we're a policy-focused body to help us to determine what kind of public policy proposals and programmatic initiatives that we can develop around economic development here in the state of Minnesota. So we have a great agenda for Friday. It's going to be starting off with our plenary speaker, who's going to be Dr. Bruce Corey, from, I believe he's from Concordia.
Yes.
And he's going to be doing Minnesota African Heritage Wealth Report. And so he did a report, and your listeners can actually go to the council's website, and you'll see it's called Black Wealth Report. And you can see a previous one that he's done. He's updated that with some great information where if you're entrepreneurial, you can take a look at that Black Capital Report, and you can see where all the opportunities are to create new businesses. Because, you know, one of the issues that we're having in Minnesota is in terms of our unemployment within our community. And we probably, working within the system, we probably might not be able to get it lower from what it is now. We have to think about other opportunities. How can we create opportunities in our own community? Because so often we look to the other communities for jobs or for economic development. Why don't we look within our community and then also look to Africa? One of the bills that we submitted this past legislative session was our enabling legislation to revise that. And one of the things we wanted to do is to have the governor do a trade mission to Africa to help connect trading resources and partnerships between, you know, the motherland and here in Minnesota, because that's a great way that we can create business opportunities and create jobs within our community, because most people that start businesses, most of them hire people that look like them, you know.
Let me interject here real quick.
Because
you was on a roll, and I know you.
Yeah.
So I had to give you a break. You can breathe now. But my question is, and I'm going into the weeds a little bit, but I'm really happy that the Council on Black Minnesotans is doing this and engaging with local African-American and African businesses. Now, is there a list, like, from the Chamber, Black Chamber of Commerce, that you've been able to access to maybe mail out invitations to all these businesses? Have you seen that or got a hold of that at all?
You know, I have not seen that. I do believe that there is one. That would be a great question for Edward and also for our consultant that's managing, putting it together for us. I know that we had reached out to the chamber and their leadership. When I was organizing the committee, I actually reached out to their chamber president but she was unable to. But we connected with several other African and African American organizations to help build the committee, and we have a great group, diverse group of people with a lot of expertise and knowledge and connections to pull off a great event, but then also let it be a resource-rich event where people can not only, you know, meet others and connect, but also to learn a lot to see how they can help, you know, empower their businesses and to move Black Minnesota forward economically.
Yeah, and I agree 100%, and it just looks to me like, I mean, I've been sitting back, been in on the calls and listening to some of the, reading the emails, and it looks like the Council of Black Minnesotans have now positioned themselves to be a power broker for local Black businesses, and this has not been seen here, you know, in my lifetime. And Mr. Edwards, I don't know about you, but if you've seen any movement at all whatsoever as it pertains to Black businesses.
Yes, but this was many, many, many years ago. Though it was one of the part of the genesis for the creation of the Council of Black Minnesotans is that would be part of their mandate and prerequisite and et cetera. And so there was a point in time in the 1960s where this was being undertaken. In fact, it was interesting to hear Mr. Lawrence talk in terms of a trade delegation, et cetera, because I well remember, and because of the pride that the late Governor Rudy Perpich had in his heritage and et cetera, you know, the Croatian, places like that, but he also, you know, valued the rich history of Minnesota with the Scandinavian countries. And I remember him taking a very interesting delegation to the Scandinavian countries, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and Finland. And one of the things that he did as an attempt to talk in terms of investment in Black Africa. Now, you know, we're talking back in the 1970s, and he brought a group of African Americans, including the then head of the executive director of the Urban League, if you will, a couple of other people, the longtime and beloved Nellie Stone Johnson, if you will, Cecil Newman, et cetera. And there was a lot of discussion, both doing and for a period following that, of developing a relationship with what appeared to be at that time emerging Black businesses and et cetera. Unfortunately, as leadership changed in the community, the leadership that came aboard no longer had no interest in that for whatever reason. I have my own opinions, but it was clear that it was a poor decision, which in fact, Mr. Allen, Mr. Lawrence, set us back, and we've never recovered. And so what I'm saying to your, in response to your question, Mr. Allen, there was a mechanism in place, there was a plan in place, and there was actually some reaching out that was being done. In fact, a group of African Americans who were into the Pan-African situation, if you will, actually tried to be a part of a trade delegation to Africa in the early 1970s. As a continued kind of follow-up. So it's been something that at one point in time was on the table in this state. I'm glad to hear Mr. Lawrence and the Council on Black Minnesotans began to move back towards that. And just think about it, gentlemen, 40 years later.
Well, let's real quick here, Mr. Lawrence, because we have a power-packed show we hope you stay tuned to, but now, the conference starts on Friday, this Friday, June 27th at 8:30, and I understand that the first 75 people get a free parking pass across the street there, and on Saturday, June 28th from 8:30 to 4 p.m. Now, the format of the day, you've said that Dr. Corey is going to be there from Concordia University doing the Capitol Report, the Black Capitol Report. Then there's a documentary. I heard there's a documentary screening that same day.
Yes. Dean Burke, who did a documentary for us last year about, you know, the history of Black Minnesota, he's doing one on Black businesses in Minnesota. And so that's going to be really good. It's going to be about 15, 20 minutes, and that's going to be showing during lunchtime, I believe on both days.
Okay, that's great. That sounds great. And so the seminars, private and public procurement.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, I hear you.
I noticed, Mr. Allen, I think there's been some kind of technical difficulty because it was getting an echo. Let's hope Mr. Lawrence is still with us, but I think there's a technical problem that's emerged.
Okay, yeah, and I'm going to adjust that here in the studio while I'm talking to him, but I just left off. There's a business planning and basic human resource seminar. There's a deploying technology seminar, insurance and finance, and supporting Black business expansion. So what is your end game? What is your end game on this Power of Unity Economic Summit, or what do you hope to achieve when it's all said and done?
Well, we want to energize the community to think about ways that we can build on the wealth of Black Minnesota. We, you know, have a buying power of, I believe it's about $3 or $4 billion. We have about 12,000 firms
here in the state of Minnesota. And so how can we pull our resources together? How can we become a stronger community? And we want to focus on do it positively. Like, you know, so many events, you know, that relates to our community, it's always about disparities and it's very negative. People are tired of that. And quite frankly, I'm tired of that. We need to look at what's positive and how can we build on that, because that's how then we're going to resolve all of the issues that are in our community. And we need to do it amongst ourselves, with ourselves, mm-hmm. and not necessarily look out externally, but we have all the resources, everything we have right in our community. We just need to be in a mindset to come together and then make things happen. And I think with the leadership we have now with the council and the board members, that's what we're, you know, that's what we're looking to do. You see that, you've seen that in our legislative bills that we submitted this past session, and then people will see that continuing forward as we move forward. So with the summit, we want to bring people together to think about the economics of the community. How can there, where are there opportunities where there aren't black businesses? For instance, in the wealth report, you know, food away from home, black Minnesotans spend $250 million a year. If you think about, well, what opportunities are there to be developed around food, for instance, you know, are there any black grocery stores? Maybe there's an opportunity for that. For instance, furniture. We spend $30 million on furniture in a year. How many black furniture stores are there? So we want to get people thinking about opportunities to create not only jobs but wealth within our community.
Okay, well, I appreciate you coming on with us tonight, and we want to let everybody know the Power of Unity Economic Summit presented by the Council on Black Minnesotans is this Friday, June 27th, and Saturday, June 28th at the Carlson School of Management, located at 321 yep. 19th Avenue South, which is on the campus of the University mm-hmm. of Minnesota. A free party.
Don, let's give the time. You haven't mentioned the time.
From 8:30 to 4
there you go.
P.M.
8:30 to 4, yes.
Mm-hmm. And stand by, because we have a caller. It might be Mr. McDonald. Excuse me. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Hello. Caller, you're live on the air. Do you have a question? Okay, they just want to listen. Okay, no problem. Yeah, both days is from 8:30 to 4 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, June 27th and 28th. Check-in is at 8:30 again, and
yep.
The business seminars are going to be Saturday afternoon, and I would recommend mm-hmm. that any small business or community development agency please come out and check this
yes.
out. And yes. I'd like to thank
and
you.
They'll be facilitated by members from various departments, you know, state departments like DEED, you know, for example, the Department of Administration. So we have people that are within state government that work within economic development who will be there helping to give business owners, you know, tips and guidelines on how to access those resources for their businesses. And so that's going to be really a power-packed day, those sessions for business owners on Saturday. But the whole summit, both days, is just going to be great for learning, for networking, and then building cultural relations amongst African heritage people.
All right.
Okay, then.
Ms. Lawrence, I want to thank you for taking the time to chit-chat with us, really, and to give us
yep.
a vision that is desperately needed, and to continue to enhance the bounce back, if you will, of the Council on Black Minnesotans. I want to thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All right. All right. Bye-bye.
All right, Mr. Allen. By the way, one of the voices that I hope that is sought out as it pertains to trade delegations and theories and plans for business opportunities in Mother Africa, former District Court Judge Lejeune Lang
yes.
Was a part of over a decade ago of a couple of delegations that went to South Africa. And Judge Lang had some excellent ideas and excellent contacts, which, of course, again, for whatever reason, you know, the leadership of said community kind of dropped the ball. Nothing kind of happened. But I know that Judge Lang still has significant contacts in South Africa. So just want to do that in any way that we can historically help. What is something that is really needed. Because I can tell you, everybody else, starting with the Chinese, are moving to establish significant trade relationships in Black Africa. All right, what else we have, Mr. Allen? And get that phone number out. Telephone lines are open.
They are open, and that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And Mr. Edwards, I'm getting some people are telling me that North High, I mean, I don't want to get off the subject here, but North High is supposed to be fixed. I invited this young lady to call us tonight and explain how North High is fixed. That the school board, you know, on September 25th, 2011, as part of a delegation, Mr. Edwards, you were there, and Mr. Lewis King was there, who gave the school board an ultimatum to fix one school in North Minneapolis or step down.
Right.
And so I posted that today with the picture that someone gratefully took of me at the podium from the television monitor, and this young lady by the name of Carrie Jo, community activist, got on and said that North High is fixed. They fixed one. So I'm inviting her to give us a call at 347-426-3904 and tell us how 19%.
Oh, I'm just elated and ecstatic that it's fixed. And I would then encourage also a longtime advocate and liaison with between the school district and the North community, Lynn Crockett, tenure employee of the district, if I'm not mistaken. I would encourage her also to call in and see if she concurs with the fact that North is fixed, if you will, whatever that means. Because I'm most interested in what that means. Fixed how? You know what I'm saying? But, hey, we await those calls. Okay.
Yeah, it'd be nice. You'll get the calls. A lot of violence out there, Mr. Edwards. You know, we got the Minneapolis NAACP officially shut down. No quorum, no elected board members, and people, you know, getting shot left and right. A couple deaths in the last couple of days. I mean, it's crazy. It's chaos out there. What's happening?
Well, because of the concern of the level of violence, and particularly in North Minneapolis, though the violence is across the entire city, you know, we're all supposed to maintain somewhat of a journalistic embargo on discussing this. Minneapolis Star Tribune sometimes has great difficulty in reporting. But yes, tragically, yesterday, two young African-Americans were officially placed on the list. In fact, one's funeral took place in North Minneapolis, which was frightening because there was fighting inside the church, outside, et cetera. It was not the fault of the pastor of the particular church, and we're not going to bother to name that church, Mr. Allen, because it's really so embarrassing when something like that happens and the trauma and et cetera. But on the same day that funeral was taking place, a father of 9 children, peacemaker, if you will, attempting to break up craziness and disturbances along the 3400 block of Penn Avenue North, was shot. In fact, he was shot in the neck, was rushed to the hospital by friends and loved ones, but succumbed, if you will, to his wounds. He leaves 9 children and a wife. There was a story in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune relevant to Mr. Martin and his death. This is a man, a construction worker, identified in the article. And I've heard from friends, if you will, Faron Brown and K.G. Wilson, men who knew the deceased, speak highly of him and with a sense of great sorrow. So we lose 2 more, if you will. Like I said, it's gotten to the place where we're losing 1 African-American per week. And for those that are jumping up and down saying that those are exaggerations, we will then segue into a meeting that took place today in which a rare situation to the extent that police and community activists. I don't want to use the word leadership because I know that the African American Leadership Council and African American leadership, whatever, take exception to common folks like us, Mr. Allen, being allowed to identify who a leader is. They said they will identify themselves that the quote-unquote wretched of the earth are not qualified to even identify and understand a leader. Of course, I take exception with that. But anyways, there was a meeting today to address the significant, outrageous level of violence that is gripping the entire city, and it's just, in fact, Officer Eric Lukes of the Minneapolis Police Department, veteran officer who has patrolled North Minneapolis the last 15 years, a very respected officer, president of the revised, if you will, revamped Black Police Officers Association, which there is a significant attempt being made to put that organization back together again after it was systematically destroyed about 5 years ago. But anyways, in the meeting today, in which included the highest-ranking African-American elected official in the state of Minnesota, State Senator Jeff Hayden, his father was also present as an example. As I said, present were the heads of both the homicide and assault units. The head of the assault unit is a African-American police officer, Lieutenant Art Knight, of course, Lieutenant Zimmerman of the homicide unit. And there was some very intense but yet productive discussion, Mr. Allen, as it pertains to the violence, the level of violence, and a peculiar pattern. Maybe we could even get a call from Councilman Wong Yang. The significant reduction in police personnel in those two specific units, as an example, while there has been an increase in newly created positions for primarily dealing with intelligence gathering. Oops. See, we weren't supposed to talk about that, but after consultation with Department of Justice associates and et cetera, I've decided to now bring forward the peculiarity. Example, 15 years ago when we were Murderapolis, if you will, we were averaging over 100 deaths, if you will, which 95% of those were African Americans. The homicide unit of the Minneapolis Police Department had 27 investigators, 27. As of this program, they are and have been for quite some time down to 12. In fact, one of the statements made in the meeting this afternoon, attended by 30 individuals who brought portfolio, if you will, if you know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen, to the meeting, that if they have a homicide tonight, it very well could create chaos because the homicide unit of 12 investigators is just overloaded and overwhelmed. In the case of the assault unit, at that same corresponding time, if you will, almost 20 years ago, there were 19 investigators in the assault unit. Today, there are 7.
Wow.
Now, this comes at a time when at the end of this month, 41 veteran Minneapolis police officers will be taking retirement, and given the retirements from January until the end of this year, we will lose approximately 100 police officers, and we are a department that it right now is approximately 100 members under strength. Under strength.
Under strength,
based
yeah.
on the size of this city. In fact, Star Tribune ran an article, Mr. Allen, and you and I talked about it in the production meeting, in which they were applauding the fact that, you know, with all the new construction going on downtown that the black folks and poor people can't afford, that we have exceeded and gone back over the 400,000 mark. We're a city of over 400,000 citizens. Well, the rule of thumb says that in a city of that size, 400,000 or over, we should have a police department of about 1,300 officers, trained officers. We currently have about 800, because of the of the retirements. We are now down to about 780. Now, we have situations tonight, as an example, in North Minneapolis. We will have a situation where we will probably have, at the top of the hour, probably no more than four squad cars in the 4th Precinct, okay?
Yeah.
We've come into a situation, and this is a part of the discussion today, if you will, in which word was sent to the two individuals that presided over the meeting were Mr. Alfred Flowers and Mr. McKenzie, the basketball coach and teacher and instructor at North High School. They had brought this to the attention and had called for a meeting because of some disturbing information and conflict that has emerged with regards to the program called My Brother's Keeper. Mr. Allen, we talked about that in production meeting. And so the reason that the heads of the homicide and assault units were asked and invited to attend this meeting, along with Senator Hayden and others, was because of the concern about not only the public safety but also education and et cetera, because there's been so much conflict, even though, you know, we're in the, you know, the vacation part of education per se. We've been told about all these programs that are supposed to be going out here and taking place right now, which are not taking place, Mr. Allen, including patrols to help with the safety of our children and et cetera, the Faith Patrol and et cetera, which has not been on the street since its inception. So anyways, this meeting, there will be a second meeting on the 9th of July. There will be additional discussions with the police department, if you will, with leaders of certain organizations. A group known as COI has, under the leadership of the Reverend Charles Yates, Mr. Ferguson and Mr. Copeland have positioned themselves and doing some very dynamic things. Of course, they are not considered to be the anointed ones. And so this organization is basically doing it gratis, if you will. But they have been extremely effective in negotiating some things, and particularly on the south side, maintaining some level. The north side is out of control, and one of the reasons, Mr. Allen, that was discussed today is that a whole new group of individuals are coming in from Chicago. And unfortunately, they are bringing with them the mantra, if you will, of the Chicago violence. And it is really sad. In fact, that's one of the reasons that some maintain that Mr. Martin was shot and killed in the middle of the street on Penn Avenue in North Minneapolis. He was not recognized, though he was trying to be a peacemaker, but he was not recognized because there are people in the city, they don't have a clue who other folks are. And so they bring the same mentality and sense of violence and retribution and revenge, though I don't know how you'd necessarily bring that when you just got into town. But when you hear the discussions, you see that. So the meeting at the Urban League, unfortunately, the head of the Urban Leagues were not present, which, again, you know, we have a meeting in the Urban League house, and, you know, Mr. Gray is not available, and no staff member is available. In fact, I tell you how this was. Even the spokesman recorded newspaper, Mr. Allen, sent a representative because they wanted to see and hear what was being discussed. So anyways, I throw that out. Maybe it's taking a little bit more time than we probably should. But it was a very productive meeting, a lot of discussion coming forward. And let me just say this because of what is happening with the Civil Rights Department, et cetera, because some of these issues are civil rights issues when you talk in terms of what is happening in the city, particularly in the job market, and et cetera, the lack of opportunity, doors being closed on African-American citizens, our young people do not have opportunity for jobs, all that rhetoric about, you know, they just need to get up and pull themselves up and go out and get a job. Well, we had discussion today, which is, you know, statistical data once again shows that that's just not an option that is fairly balanced. And one of the things that came up in the meeting, and this came from Coach McKenzie, is that at a meeting, which was actually a closed meeting at the Humphrey Institute, a young Caucasian woman, 24 years old, stood up and indicated that they were there to help the Negro community, a black community, have a better understanding of what is expected of us. And it turned into a near riot. In fact, Coach McKenzie, to his credit, walked out. But what he did do is that he alerted folks to what had happened, to the statements that are being made, and to the planning that is going on how to once again have the master, quote-unquote, take charge and control of our children, which means our destiny. And so the Carlson, excuse me, I fraudulent slip there, the University of Minnesota's Humphrey Institute, I think, owes the African-American community a explanation, if you will. And like I said, this comes at a time when the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department was being asked also to be of some assistance, and they basically rejected any concern or involvement.
So when Obama comes to town, Mr. Edwards, what black neighborhood or black church will he be visiting?
None. The itinerary, in fact, the both of the lieutenants that were present with us this afternoon at the Minneapolis Urban League are assigned to the special presidential detail. And we kind of, because I've known both the lieutenants for quite some time, we kind of chit-chatted about, you know, that. And his itinerary does not call for him to be anywhere close to the black community or black people. You can see him if you go to Lake Harriet for that event. You will not you will not be invited to the Kaplan's, where there will be a private fundraiser. And there will be a event in southwest Minneapolis in the Silk Stocking District talking in terms of economic opportunity, but there won't be any discussion about economic opportunity, and there won't be any discussion for academic opportunity for African Americans. So to your specific question, Mr. Allen, the president, once again, I think this is his fifth visit doing his presidency, the president will not be touching the hands of, quote-unquote, any black folk per se. So there will be no black churches, no black institutions, no black organizations that he will be attending. The black democratic leadership, I guess, in its wisdom, decided that'd be just too much of a demand on their time.
Yeah. And then we have a couple callers and something on the police scanner, so we'll get to them callers.
I have a material witness on an aggravated battery with a handgun, and they believe this might be in retaliation to her testimony.
Caller, go ahead. Like a retaliation.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ian. Who's the caller, and what's your question?
We have two callers. Caller, go ahead. Mr. E?
Mr. M.
Mr. M, okay.
M, that's what? M. MI5, baby.
MI5, what's
service.
Up?
Go right ahead, M. What you got?
Mr. M, well, you know, thanks a lot, Mr. Edwards, for really enlightening the community, because so many of these things go on in our community behind the scenes. You know, our newspapers, our, you know, all the information just seems to be suppressed, and it really takes a watchdog mentality that you and Mr. Allen have displayed to really bring this information out, because it's, see, really what's going on and what we see and all the things, these are dire times and circumstances for our people. The things that you're these are horrific. These are things that people need to, turn tables over and stand up to correct these things. I mean, you look at, you know, as you were saying, the retirements and the reduction in force in Minneapolis almost in half. This has not only happened with the police. This is happening in social services. This is happening to teachers. Where you have these experienced people that have worked in communities and have dug in, and they've had enough. They've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't get resources. They don't get support. You know, they don't give the kids enough, you know, even enough food. Even the big thing is feeding the kids. They don't even want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
know, the crisis, is, I mean, it's to the point where, you know, now you have, like they say, we're getting into the, Minneapolis and St. Paul is getting into the realm of the Detroits, the Chicagos, the Newarks.
Yes,
where
sir.
The
yes, sir.
Structures and the inner city things have just been abandoned, okay, and everything is moved out. Everything is moved out. I mean, they talk, you know, I go to Detroit all the time. I have a sister that lives there, and I used to go years and years. Detroit was a wonderful city when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
Auto jobs. I mean, if you didn't have a new car, you were nobody in Detroit. Really. You worked at the car, you know, worked at the car factories, or you worked at the suppliers, and you had a good life there. Well,
yes,
that
sir.
All goes away, and they just leave that.
Uh-huh.
And you have an abandoned city. But the suburban areas of, for example, the city of support of Detroit, are one of the richest suburban counties in the country.
Right, right.
On the
right
outside,
out,
everyone,
yeah.
Rochester, Auburn Hills, there's some. These are some
Woo.
Of the per capita people in this United States.
Uh-huh.
But that core has been abandoned, and this is what, this seems to be the plan. You know, put basically you're being put on a reservation. Is what you're really being, is what's really happening. It's
being
expanding
right. Uh-huh.
into the cities, and you're being put on a reservation with limited police, limited fire, limited
Ooh.
Service, limited education, and
uh-huh.
I mean, I can see it as plain as day. I can see it as plain as the nose on my face.
All right,
but
sir.
We're not. I we're asleep at the wheel, Mr. Edwards, Mr. Allen, and you know your program is a breath of fresh air for me to listen to find, you know, that we do have people that have a mentality to say, wait a minute, well, this isn't right. I mean, don't, as the great the guy in the movie said, don't piss on my back and tell me it's raining.
Absolutely.
Clint Eastwood.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
So we really have to stand up and, you know, do something about this. I hate to see organizations like Urban League, I mean, NAACP, which I looks to be just almost a farce. I mean, it's becoming Mystic Knights of the Sea. It's not becoming a proud organization, a Thurgood Marshall, who changed the course of this country through
yes, sir. Thank you.
Through the legal means. He
uh-huh.
took them to the mat. From their own rules.
Yes.
Beat them at their own game.
Yes.
And this is the way you have to play it, you know. So, you know, I just wanted to comment and, you know, give you guys a heads up and say, you know, I'm behind you, and hopefully some of these organizations we can get together and turn this thing around.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you, M. Thank you. All right.
And Mr. Edwards, I'd like to share something with you, too, that Mr. M., kind of woke me up to. I was privileged to hear some comments in a meeting that people didn't know that I was kind of outside the door.
Okay.
And in North Minneapolis. And, you know, we got a lot of events coming up in July. Pride, the Aquatennial, the Rib thing, a whole bunch of different events in downtown Minneapolis. And the 4th Precinct was telling people that, you know, you're talking about 4 squad cars, it's probably going to be less than that roaming North Minneapolis during those events.
Oh.
Yes, sir. You're absolutely correct. By the way, one of the things that Senator Hayden shared
another,
with
we have
us.
We another caller
the,
also. Go ahead.
Just a caller with Oprah for just a second.
Okay.
Senator Hayden talked in terms of the jokes that are being told, and some of this is coming out of the University of Minnesota and some of those places where they're talking about, and it's the code name for black voters, they're talking about dropout voters. So many of you out there who, you know, maybe voted in 2008 and 2012 and haven't done anything, there's even a code name now for us as dropout voters. And there is a discussion about the fact that there's a lot of expectation that that pattern will continue, and by the time we wake up, the voting rights bill will have died. Caller? What can we do for you? Any question we may answer?
Hello? Go ahead. Oh, yes, you're all live on the air, sir. Yes, you.
Hi, this is Zach, man. I'm calling in.
Okay. Mr. Montoya, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine this evening. Thoroughly enjoying listening in on the show. I just have one brief comment about the Economic Development Summit. I think it's a wonderful thing that they're doing. And I hope that, I think his name is Mr. Cunningham. Mr. Cunningham, who has just received a prestigious new appointment of an organization that's supposed to be centered around economic development for minorities.
Yes, I'm sure
he'll be there in attendance to gain some further knowledge and background information that could be vital to his position in assisting African Americans and Africans with economic development opportunities from his position and standpoint, because he's most definitely an individual that can help them out now, if he's.
And this is his new position as the powerful executive director of MEDA, the Metropolitan Economic Development Group. That, sir, is an excellent observation. In fact, we should have expected that the chairman of the Council on Black Minnesotans would have probably even identified gentlemen that Mr. Cunningham, in fact, has already probably asked to have a couple minutes to address the assembly. Would you gentlemen think so? To talk
in terms of
his mission.
I would think so. Important enough. I think it would be important enough for his organization to request to have a booth there where they could display all of the information of how to put in applications with the organization for small business loans, small business grants, things of that nature, and invite themselves to the communities and entrepreneurs in the state of Minnesota that are African and African American, and introduce themselves to them. I think it would be a great opportunity for them.
I fully concur. I think that's great. I mean, because I myself had missed the possibility of who brings such expertise with him from the Northwest Area Foundation, where he was for a number of years. That, I think, Mr. Montoya, is excellent. I just hope that, Mr. Allen, you will, shoot that back to Mr. McDonald, the executive director of the Council of Black Minnesotans. I think to have a booth / table at the Carlson School by MEDA, I think that's a wonderful idea, Mr. Montoya.
That is a great idea.
Now, I'd like to speak the last caller, brought up some points that kind of put a chill in me. He said, he mentioned the Urban League, and,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I'm not that active in the community as I used to be, but I know when I was active in the community, the Urban League had transformed. It had evolved from being really activist kind of organization and things of that nature to be pretty much basically being a landlord. They're sitting back collecting rent from different organizations and things of that nature that rent space there in the buildings and everything, and pretty much that pays the employees that they have now. Of course, they laid everybody off that was doing active work in the community, activism type of work, and they laid all them off and shut down a lot of those programs, but the money they collect off of rent seems to be able to pay the expense of employees that are still there, including their president, CEO, I guess he is, and things of that nature. So they're pretty comfortable right now where they are, just being a landlord. That's what I got to say about the Urban League. What I got to say about the NAACP is this. There was high expectations and high hopes of what the new NAACP Minneapolis branch was going to do. And I, as a person that used to put in a lot of volunteerism type of hours and things of that nature in North Minneapolis and in the activism type of work, I have to say right now, I am so let down. I am so let down. We need for something to emerge in North Minneapolis or in Minneapolis as a whole that's going to be a sign of hope, a sign of pride for the African Americans and the Africans in this area. And what a letdown. What a letdown. I think that the first sign that there was going to be trouble was when one of the vice presidents, and I think it was Mr. Don Allen, I'm pretty sure it was, when there was problems with Mr. Don Allen asking questions and things of that nature. I know Mr. Allen, and sometimes he can be an agitator, but the one thing about it is nobody can dispute his professionalism and his knowledge and business sense. Now, if you need somebody sitting at the table that understands business and understands administrative operations and things of that nature, I don't see trying to get rid of Mr. Allen, okay? I mean, he can be an agitator. I'm first to admit that. But the thing about it is agitators get balls rolling to get things moving. But his professional level, number one, number two, his knowledge and things of that nature and experiences, I think, would have been vital to be used there at the NAACP. Mm-hmm. Now, the news that the NAACP is once again pretty much defunct, to me, is very disheartening, Mr. Edwards and Don. I think that the main thing is that people thought they were going to be able to access some type of funding, some type of monies for different programmings or different projects. And the ones that they had their eyes on or whatever pretty much fell through. And then all of a sudden now it's not that important. It seems to be the activity of the day. It seems to be the norm that you come out and you say we got these problems and we got these killings in North Minneapolis. We don't have no jobs for our youth. We don't have any jobs for our African American males. We don't have any. We're still among the top 10 cities in the country as far as homeless families that work. That means that you got a working parent in the household, but the families are still homeless. Okay, and of course 90% of those families are African American. So we got all this stuff going on, and we seem to have. I'm not going to even say leadership. But we seem to have people that are out there in the vocal eye of the community as a whole that want to meet and they want to bring these points out and they want to bring in politicians and everybody else and say, we got this problem, we got to do something about it. But then when the dollar amount is not right or there is no dollar amount about doing some programming or something in that nature to bring about some type of resolution to the negativity, then they want to drop it and leave it alone. There is no more interest. Well, I understand that they are professionals. I understand a lot of them have been to college. They've taken these classes and they've got these degrees and of course they're at a certain level of being a professional that should earn a certain amount of dollars or whatever else like that. But here's my problem. If you say that your interest is one of activism, that your interest is to fight for civil rights, that your interest is to fight for the rights of the people, then where does your level of professionalism come into play?
Oops.
Are you here to get a program started, or are you here to operate a program?
Huh.
Because there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
If your interest is to bring about some type of resolution for our problems, that's one thing. But if your interest is to operate something that's going to do that, that's another. I mean, if you're a professional, surely you have a job. You should have some type of income. Do you need more income doing something else? You understand what I'm saying? We got people that need jobs that are well-educated, have experience and expertise that can operate these organizations. I heard Mr. Edwards mention, I'm rambling on, but I'm going to stop in a minute. I heard Mr. Edwards mention earlier about Brother Yates and Jerome, and they're out there in the community and they're doing work and they ain't got no money. They ain't got no money.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
And Mr. Ferguson.
They're out there, they're out there and they're doing the work. And you know, that's who I'm going to support. That's the type of activity that I want to support. I don't want to support people anymore that's out there talking about what needs to be done. They know how to fix it, but we need some money. Oh, you're going to give us $150,000, but we need $400,000. Or we need $500,000. Well, good Lord, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Am I right or am I wrong?
You're absolutely correct, sir.
Mr. Montoya, I appreciate the kind words. I'm sure Mr. Edwards does also, but I just need to interject something like that in this conversation before you even get off the phone, if that's okay with you, Mr. Edwards. I have to tell Mr. Montoya, you know what? When I went over there to this church, I went and talked to the current president of the NAACP. I told him, I said, you know what? We don't agree eye to eye politically, but I think we have something very powerful here. And if we use this power and we go to these 21 Fortune 500 companies that are headquartered here in Minnesota, like the old school NAACP used to do, we can hire executive director, get a staff, and start dealing with the ACLU and taking the Civil Rights Department of Minneapolis to court, taking MnDOT to court, taking these people that are not upholding or adhering to the law like the NAACP did in the olden days, okay, and get some respect, and then start work programs and education programs. Man, all this dude wanted to do is go down to the stadium and get some more money. And I said, wait a minute, dude, what? I said, MnDOT's getting ready to get like $40-something billion to work on Minnesota's roads, bridges, and highways. I said, every one of us here got a car. We all pay that tax that goes to that Fed to go to MnDOT. I said, we need to address that because we can get $10 million from MnDOT tomorrow based off CFR Part 49, Part 26. This dude says, well, we don't have time to do that. I'm like, these are idiots, okay, idiots. And so with that said, I mean, I had to vent. But it's just like, you know, there's market change.
Let me just put one thing in there on that.
Okay.
Have you ever tried to jump on a speeding train? I mean, if you're standing by the railroad tracks and the train is going by you doing 60, 70 miles an hour, have you ever tried to jump on that train? Do you think you're going to make it?
No.
No, you ain't going to make it. The whole mechanism of the contracts, everything else for the stadium was already in place. That train is already running. How are you going to jump on that train now?
Mm-hmm. Get your feelings hurt.
Excellent point. Unless you have a wish to be suicidal.
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
you got a wish to be suicidal,
absolutely.
Then you should be in a position of leadership.
Well, it's a little late for the stadium right now. And they
it's
are
a little
suicidal.
Late.
They obviously were suicidal, Mr. Edwards, because the organization is dead. There's only two, the president and the assistant treasurer are the only two elected people still from December 13th. No quorum, no action, dead. Suicide. Self.
That's unbelievable. That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. I died in less than 6 months. Thank you, Mr. Montoya. We appreciate it. We're getting ready to wrap. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
We have one more caller.
Caller, you've been holding for 19 minutes. Go ahead. You're live.
Oh, Lord have mercy. We apologize. Caller, what's your question?
Yes, you're live on the air, sir. Yes, please. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Hey, Don Ron, this is Marvin. How are you guys?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Real good,
how
Marvin. How's it going? What do you got for us?
Hey, man, my prayers take up all the time, man. Hey, I just want to make a couple comments. Number one, I'm glad I'm listening to the show. I hope that a lot of people listen to the show because, like the brother right before Mateo said, the information you guys provide is invaluable for those people who, you know, feel some relevancy and some connection to the community and want to see some change. I think that this is that your program is a fountain of knowledge and wisdom and information that we all need if, you know, there is in fact going to be a change in this community. So I support you guys 100%. Keep up the good work. There was a couple of years ago, Don, when I first met you, you had mentioned something about the ineffectiveness of the 250 to 400 nonprofits in the black community. And, you know, I thought about that over time. And fast forward to now, when we look at, in my opinion, when we look at a lot of what's going on, the fact that we can't get on that train, you know what I mean, and not just with employment, but with health care, with incarceration, with drugs, whatever. I mean, we just can't. We're losing ground, you know. And that's my rub. That's my anxiety, is that, you know, we're looking at, you know, 50 years of the civil rights, and we're weaker now than we were 50 years ago. At our core of each of black human beings' experience now, we are weaker than two generations before us, you know what I mean, that had a mission to overcome. We're not there anymore. Somehow that got watered down, diluted, and we're lost. But the point I want to make is this, is that, and it gets back to the point that you made, Don, and I really believe this, because we are getting worse here with the millions of dollars poured in through the nonprofits with all of these black organizations, and you guys are mentioning the two or three main ones, but there's dozens of others that just aren't doing the work that they've been paid to do. And I think it's time for the community to start calling these nonprofits out and hold them accountable. If you did, in fact, take money to say you're going to create change, then you need to, in your annual meeting or your board meetings or whenever it is that you're assessed for your next bankroll, you need to come before some kind of a panel and say, we did this, we did this, we did this, because that's the only way that this thing is going to change, using the institutions and the entities that are already paid and in place.
I agree. I think we should start with Alfred Babington Johnson and the Stair Step Foundation. That would be,
and then follow up with the with Nas.
I
agree. I'm just saying start somewhere, but I'm on board with it because I think that a lot of people, you know, just like me, that are frustrated and want to help, but you can't get on that train. And you can, and I think the only way to get on that train is to call those people out that are already passengers. You know what I mean? You know, you've already paid, and we want to know why you're here and what you're doing and why we should continue to see your funding. And that's all I got to say. But
all right. Thank you, my brother. Thank you, Marvin.
I appreciate it, you guys. Yeah.
All right.
Take
care.
Thank you, sir.
All right. All right. Yeah, well, Mr. Allen, looks like we're – obviously you had us locked in to 10, right?
Yeah, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah. Let me do this then very quickly. The Minneapolis Civil Rights Department is playing with this thing of 50 years after 1964, the Civil Rights Act and et cetera, signed by then President Lyndon Baines Johnson and et cetera. I have to tell you, I'm doing a column for next week in which I raised the question about the future of the Civil Rights Department, Mr. Allen, as well as the so-called Civil Rights Commission, which people don't even talk about anymore. I'll do it like this very quickly. There was a presentation made 51 years ago by then Mayor Arthur Naftalin. So that means a lot of the DFL liberals and et cetera are going to have a hard time saying, oh, you know, we don't want to hear that crap, because Arthur Naftalin was one of the giants, if you will, of the Democratic Party, its philosophy and et cetera, close friend and advisor to Hubert Humphrey and et cetera. So we get all that out of the way. On June 30th, 1963, Arthur Naftalin, speaking in the State of the City message, beginning his second term as mayor, talked in terms of the racial divide and the hostility and dangers, Mr. Allen, and our listening audience, that was being created. Again, this was June 30th, 1963. 2 years later, a white reporter, columnist for the Minneapolis Star, which is, you know, still the Star Tribune, they used to be separate in those days, named Dick Cunningham, not to be confused with Gary Cunningham. Dick Cunningham was the Doug Groh of his era, all right? His column appeared on the 18th day of July, 1965. And he talked about the fact that nonviolence was beginning to run kind of thin with young African Americans and others of the Negro community. And within a matter of weeks, this city exploded. And for the next four summers and et cetera, culminating with the National Guard in 1967 being called in, this city became a volcano as it pertains to racial conflict. And I say that historically because, unfortunately, we do not have a black historical museum. $3 million was raised and set aside, but you and I know, Mr. Allen, it disappeared, and so we don't have a museum, and so we don't have the history. And much of this history is being lost, if you will. Vong Yang and organizations he's affiliated with have called for the resignation of Velma Corvell. In our column this week in the Spokesman Recorder, we too have called for her resignation. In fact, actually, our column was in position even before the letter. I say all that to say that we are, you know, Marvin said something that should be of great concern, and I also heard much of this in the meeting today at the Minneapolis Urban League. There is a trembling, if you will, of volatility in the land. Many think that, you know, we in the African-American community have been beaten down and are nothing more than just a bunch of punks and et cetera. I don't concur with that point of view, Mr. Allen, and I say that to our listening audience. There is a rage that is in existence in this community, and the police and nobody else is going to be able to beat it out of us, if you understand what I'm saying, Don. And so I just think that people need to take a look at where we're at, where we're going, and if we're going to be able to get there. I like what Mr. Montoya said. You know, I think we as black people are tired of trying to catch a fast train, a moving train going 65, 70 miles an hour with a bunch of hustlers on it who spend time in the club car talking in terms of the wonderful job they're doing as the train sweeps through these depressed communities and neighborhoods. And I just think it has to be said, Mr. Allen, these are dangerous times, okay?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Well, with that said, you've listened to, for the last almost hour and a half, the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be back next Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Any questions can be directed to ibnnnews@gmail.com, or you can leave a message on the Blog Talk Radio website. This broadcast will be in podcast, but you can hook it up to your iTunes or just live on demand if less than 5 minutes after this show goes off the air. And Mr. Edwards, thank you again. I think it was a wonderful show we had tonight. And thank the callers that called in, and Chairman Patwin Lawrence from the Council on Black Minnesotans. Appreciate that. And maybe we will get Ed McDonald on here one day, someday. But until then, everyone have a great night.
All right. Let them take us home. Thank you.